The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
And we are so thrilled to welcome extreme cleaning specialist Matt Paxton back to the show. Matt has spent decades helping people sort through all the things they've accumulated in attics, basements, garages, and you name it, anywhere. You may know Matt from his years on the television shows Hoarders or Legacy List with Matt Paxton.
And Matt is also the author of a great new book called Keep the Memories, Lose the Stuff. Declutter, downsize, and move forward with your life. Matt, we thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me back.
Tell us why you decided to write the book.
Well, I was beginning the pandemic, and I always wanted to put this information down in a book. I've been doing it for 20 years, and quite honestly, I just get probably 20 messages a night on Facebook, people saying, hey, what should I do here? What should I do here? What should I do here? And so I actually went back on during the pandemic at the beginning, and I got I went through 2 years of social media posts and emails and questions and put all those questions together. And I was like, I'm just going to write a book. Like, I'm going to get everybody's questions together and I'm going to put it down in one big format so that, you know, if people want to do it themselves, they can. And it ended up being a bigger project than I expected.
I'm imagining that a million people are asking you, how do I even start out? And I love the 10-minute sweep idea. I think that makes it so much less overwhelming. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So 10-minute sweep is just, you know, and you're exactly right. Everybody's overwhelmed. They don't know where to start. And I always compare it to like working out, you know, like, or exercising. Like you're not, I mean, I used to run marathons. It's always compared to that. Like, you're not going to run a marathon in the first week. You're going to maybe walk 10 minutes. You're going to maybe run 20. And then over 5 months, you get up to, you know, the 26 miles. And so my deal is 10-minute sweep is, it's just start, man. You just got to get started. And it's about practice. It's actually not about what you accomplish. It is about getting in the habit of doing it nightly for 10 minutes. So I really don't care what you clean. I pick a 1-foot by 1-foot area. Honestly, since I've written the book, I've even trimmed it down to as simple as, hey man, if you don't know where to start, clean the dishes, like just get the sink done every night. If you can wash all the dishes and leave the sink empty at the end of the night, well, like that's a good start, and just get in that habit. So it's really about repetition and practice and not necessarily what you actually accomplished.
Why do we accumulate so many things? And also, I'm wondering whether you're noticing any generational differences between what the older generation wants to keep and what young people are keeping. Are young people keeping as much?
Yes and no. This is two great questions. So start the first one. Why do we keep it? Well, we keep stuff, honestly, because we love people. You know, we keep things. We keep because we think we need them. We think we might need them later. But like, even when you keep it because you might think you might need it later, what's actually going on there is you want to be the person that has it if we all need it later. And so believe it or not, I do believe deeply, deeply down, we keep stuff because it's attached to people and emotions that we have strong feelings about, some positive, some negative. I don't believe stuff is ever really about the utilitarian value of the stuff. You can always get other stuff. That's not what it's about. You know, it's not that you love that. Oh, this item right here has four legs. I can sit on it. I love sitting. That's not it. Oh my God, my grandma sat in this chair. I loved my grandma. She was awesome. She used to take me to get candy. I love caramels. Oh my God, my grandma's the best. I'm keeping this chair. All right, like that's really what's going on. And so I started a couple years ago, and I go into a hoarded house and be like, oh, look at this, man. You got a lot of people you love, don't you? Huh? What? And so I transitioned it to that. And I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, it's just we have a lot of love for people. And that's why we have a hard time letting go of the stuff. And the problem is the more memories and the more positive vibes we have on these items, the more items we have, it does slow our life down because we have too much stuff and too many memories to manage. And so a lot of the book is going to help you how to really let go of those memories and like get them out in the open and share them and embrace them and enjoy them. Now, the big question I love you just asked was that second one. Do younger generations, you know, keep a lot of stuff? They do. It's digital, right? It's not necessarily physical. I will argue most, you know, most third generation kids, millennials, actually have more pictures than mom and dad do. We just have it in shoeboxes. They have it on devices that are, you know, hidden all over their room. A digital pile is still a pile. It's still things you have to get to. It's still worries. It's still things you haven't finished. It's tasks you haven't done. That's still the same thing for grandma. Hers is just physically in front of her. Yours is digital. Now I'm relying on pictures there, but like, oh, there's so much in this question. I mean, half the book is about this question, just so you know. Like, so many of my seniors, they come to me and say, well, my grandkids don't want any of my stuff. They don't love me. They don't need my things. It's like, no, that's not what's going on. They just don't want the stuff you want them to want. They still want some stuff. They just don't need that specific bowl that you want them to have. They actually want something else that's smaller, but still makes them very happy.
And I know we talked about this on the last show that we did together, but it's such a great idea to take pictures of those kinds of things. So if grandma has pottery or she's got some, you know, kitchen item, I don't know, she's got a spoon she loves or something that we're never going to use, we get to kind of keep it and keep a memory of her, but we don't have to accumulate things.
Yeah. Like I had a client last year that her grandma wanted her to have this really important can opener. It was a beautiful copper, like very well made, it's probably 150 years old. It was amazing can opener. Well, this girl's vegan. She only eats fresh fish. She hasn't bought anything in a can in 5 years, you know, and including sodas. And so she's like, well, grandma, I don't use those. And so I was like, well, let's just take a really cool picture of this. And grandma was still like, I don't know. And then here's the kicker. You can digitize it, which is wonderful. Document the story. You got to tell the story. You got to say, well, why does grandma like this thing so much? And she'll tell the story. Well, you know, during the Depression, we couldn't get canned food. Mm-hmm. And we were hungry. And so for me, getting that can actually meant that we had made it. You know, when your grandfather went away for 5 years to find work, and when we got our first canned food, that means we were wealthy enough to get something that wasn't off the lines. And so for me, you know, for grandma, it was a status symbol. So when that granddaughter heard the story of it was so much more than a can opener, she's like, oh, I totally want that can opener.
Yeah. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Then you got to hear the whole story. Now here's the other kicker. What if you hear the whole story and the girl still doesn't want that item? Mm-hmm. It's okay. You can donate it to someone that actually does want it. I'm really big on donation. Like, the more you donate, the more you can help other people. And a lot of times our oldest generation, they have really strong feelings about an item and they want someone to care and love and enjoy that item as much as they did. It may not be your grandkids. It might be someone else that you donate that to, but someone will love that item as much as you did.
There's a lot of stuff that I've gone through and I'm not sure if it should go in the donate pile or the trash pile. Like, say it's a shirt that has a stain on it. Like, when is it too far gone for us to include in the donate pile?
All right. Oh, that's a good question. So donate, I'm going to tell a story because this is what I do. I tell stories. I had a guy named Lee, and the book is all about telling the stories. I had a guy that used to work for me, Leroy, and we were cleaning a very, very well-to-do family's house. And I'll never forget this lady. She said, and Leroy had he lived under a bridge. He'd had a rough life. I was lucky to have him as an employee. He's a fascinating guy. And we're cleaning this, you know, bazillionaire's house. And the lady goes, oh, that shirt's all ratty and rusty. She goes, why don't you just go ahead and donate it? And he goes, ma'am, I'm homeless. I'm not ugly. I need your good stuff. He goes, I'm trying to get a real job. And I kind of looked at her and him and I was like, man, he's totally right. Mm-hmm. You know, and what there is, you need to give your better stuff, not your worst stuff, because, you know, the more I actually now am Goodwill's ambassador and helping people at Goodwill, actually, I'm learning how many people get put to work, not just in the stores, but like way beyond that. The more stuff we donate to Goodwill, the more people get jobs. And so all I can stress is, like, the better the stuff you give, the better, you know, these people are set up to actually get jobs. So, like, give. And it doesn't have to be Goodwill. It could be anywhere you want. Whatever you find is, you know, your mission, what matches that mission, something you care about, I say give it. But don't give your trash, because when you give trash to any donation center, you're actually giving them a cost. They have to throw it away or we have to recycle it. So give your good stuff. Your bad stuff, if you think it's ratty and you think it's trash, then it is trash. And dispose of it properly so you're not passing that cost on.
You know, Matt, I know you have worked with so many different families and you've seen the kinds of tensions that are brought up when people talk about decluttering and getting rid of the things that they've accumulated over the years. So what advice would you have for family members who feel that maybe someone has developed a hoarding situation, or maybe not a hoarding situation, but just has a lot of stuff that needs to be gone through? And how do you bring up the topic? What are some things to say? And what are some ways that you shouldn't approach it? What are some bad things?
So what to say and how to say it are two different things. I'm about brutal honesty. Just say it. Don't dance around it. But also, you know, be respectful. So I'm more about, if that conversation needs to be private between probably the nicest person in the family. You know, there's always like that middle kid that they probably shouldn't be the one telling that. Because they'd be like, oh, grandma, you got a bunch of crap around here. And they say it in front of the whole family. Right?
Right.
That third kid doesn't, it's the third kid, right? The third kid doesn't care. He'll say anything, right? Like, don't let that happen. It needs to be usually the oldest adult daughter, honestly. Because they're one scared of mom.
The daughter, that's interesting.
The oldest,
it's always the oldest. It's never the son. It's never the son. It's either the oldest adult daughter or the oldest adult daughter-in-law. I don't think it's fair to have daughter-in-laws give this information to mom. I don't think that's fair. It sets them up for failure. She's not part of the tribe. She's temporary part of the tribe. I guess just, there's structure within a family.
I agree
that's
with you.
Not,
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, you're setting this person that's not her real daughter. And I don't mean to say that, but like, there's a lot of complicated family dynamics and it gets wrapped up in stuff, right?
Right.
And you might be married for 40 years, but they still say, well, you're my daughter-in-law, right? And then, and then what happens is all these dynamic stuff that it isn't even about the stuff, but that's what pours out at that moment.
Yeah.
So I think it needs to be either make the son do it, which is always challenging, but like the oldest adult daughter is usually who does it. And it needs to be done in private and respectful. And it needs to get right to the chase, which is like, hey, mom, like, you got a lot of stuff here and it's holding you back. And then I focus on what is it holding her back from, all right, which is I call the finish line. Like, what is our goal here? Are you moving in with an adult child? Are you moving to an assisted living community? Are you trying to just clean up the space so you can age in place appropriately? Like, what are the, what's the, like, what's the goal here? You know, are we cleaning out the house to sell it to pay for, you know, something else, you know, better, a better situation? Whatever it is, that's what I get at pretty quick. Say, like, hey, look, mom, I know you want to be closer to your grandkids. We got to clean up this house so they can come over so it's safe for them. And what you're focusing on is not that, hey, grandma, you got a lot of crap. You're saying, hey, grandma, I want to get this place safe so the grandkids can come over. Right? You're transitioning the problem to the what we all want, not necessarily too much stuff. Everyone already knows they got too much stuff. So we don't need to dwell on that. Like, that's just a 1 second comment. Yeah, there's too much stuff here. It's not safe. Now let's get to what's going to bring us happiness, right? Like, what are we really trying to do here? And it's called the finish line. And then I really push on the why. Like, why are you moving, right? Like, okay, great, we're moving. But it's like the, you know, like, I might have talked about this on the last time I was on here, but like, I say this all the time. Like, I've actually, since I've talked to you guys, I've lost 25 pounds, actually.
Good for
and
you.
I've always,
wow, congratulations.
Yeah, I've always struggled with my weight as an adult, like really struggled with it. And I don't know, like Thanksgiving, my son said to me, hey, dad, like right before Thanksgiving, it was the day after Halloween. That's exactly what it was. Because he saw me eating a bunch of his candy. And he goes, Dad, are you going to die at the same age your dad did? I go, what? And he goes, well, your dad was 52 when he died. And he goes, Dad, I was thinking about it. You're 47. So, like, are you going to die in 5 years? I go, but he's 12, by the way, guys. My son is 12. I said, do you think about this? He goes, yeah, I think about it all the time, Dad. Like, your dad's not here to help you. And I want you to be there to help me. He goes, I think dad, being a dad is going to be hard. And I need you there to help me. And I go, yeah, buddy, I'm going to be there. And he goes, well, then why are you eating all that food that you know is bad for you?
Right.
And I was like, holy cow. Right? He called me out.
Yeah.
Right. And so my why is I want to be a grandpa. Right? Mm-hmm. And so, and here's why it's important to have this why. Because it's really easy to quit two things. It's really easy to quit weight loss, and it's really easy to quit decluttering. Because you can just shut the door, or you can just quit and eat something, right? And so that why is what keeps you going when it gets hard. And I told a very emotional story there on purpose, because the whole point is we want to stick with it, right? And now anytime I want to like eat Cheez-Its, I'm like, okay, well, no. I can't. I want to be a grandpa. Right. And so for you, whatever that, if you want to be close to your grandkids or you want to have independence or you want to have a better health, like whatever that why is, you got to stick on that. And that's what we're focusing on with mom. We're not focusing on blaming her for having too much crap, because that's not really what matters. It's what's the end product we all want, including mom. And so just be really clear on that. And it doesn't need to be a 5-hour conversation. It's a 5-minute conversation. Mom, got too much stuff. Really no debating here. Now, what do you really want? What life do you want? Where we want to go? And then get to that why. And just, you know, really get, and if people start to engage in negativity, either get them. I mean, I do not recommend that being a group conversation. Families do that all the time, and that's the wrong way to do it. And the only thing worse than a group conversation is a surprise cleanup.
Yeah, because you can't just, I know that from watching the shows, you can't just show up there and have a truck and say, hey, we're cleaning.
Or worse.
They'll resent you.
Or worse, they go to the hospital for a couple of days and you're like, this is our chance. Let's go clean out the house. I've seen families decimated by that.
So what happens?
Well, that's theft as far as the homeowner's concerned. You know, like, I mean, this I've seen this. It's happened to my family. My great aunt was, it's no secret. I've talked about it. My great aunt, BB, one of the funniest women you'll ever meet. She was single her entire life. She was a hoarder. She was amazing. I used to clean her house every summer as a kid. Like, that was my job. And I'd go in and clean her house for a couple of weeks. And I mean, this is, I was a 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid doing this, and I loved it. I didn't know that it would become my career. You know, I just loved hearing her, talking to her, and getting her stories. Well, one time she went to the hospital, and my mom, my aunt, my grandma, and my other aunt, they all went in and cleaned the house out. And they got it ordered the way they wanted it, not the way she wanted it. And they obviously thought they were doing the right thing. I mean, they really believed that she would come home and be like, thanks, girls, this is amazing. Well, she came home and she felt like her house had been robbed.
Yeah.
And she never spoke to them again. I mean, she was like, those girls came in and threw everything of mine away. And they were those girls for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
It changed the flow of our life, you know?
And you can't get that stuff back once you've donated it and trashed it.
Nope, you cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube, right? And so what I'll say on that is, you know, what ended up happening was that person had individual storing and filing structures that worked for her. It may not have been what the rest of us liked, but my aunt knew where stuff was. And what actually happened was the letters my grandfather wrote his mother during the war were in a purse that they donated. So the handwritten letters that my grandfather sent during the war. Now, we were actually able to go back to the donation center. They actually still had it, and we got them. So we were really lucky. In fact, I have those letters now. We were able to get some stuff back. But I mean, like, my point there is it's really tragic. You know, like, it changed the family flow. And so, you know, they didn't know. They honestly believed they were doing the right thing. But I promise you, if the hoarder's not involved, it's not the right thing. They got to be involved because their system works for them, right? Or, you know, one thing that's happened, and let's take this beyond hoarding, just in general, like, just because you don't understand how that person structures their home and manages their home, it doesn't mean that they don't. They just don't do it the way you would do it. It might totally work for them. So you got to include them because they may have, like, oh no, these boxes over here, these have been sorted through them. And, you know, like, I had one lady that she would put stuff in a manila envelope, and she would seal it and she would write trash. Right? So I came in to clean, and I'm like, well, this is trash. She's like, oh no, that's actually important financial documents. I put trash on it so that the robbers, when the robbers come in, they won't steal it because they think it's trash.
Very smart idea.
Right? And you know what? I can't argue with that. I can't argue. That's pretty smart, actually. But I didn't know her filing structure. So if I had gone into that house, right, if she wasn't there, I would have thrown that stuff away. I would have shredded it, probably. You know, and I mean, honest to God, that we actually found, this is a true story, we found $2 million in one of those envelopes. Stock certificates that had not been digitized. So they were old stock certificates from the 70s and 80s from all the Pac Bells and Mom Bells, which eventually became Verizon.
Yeah,
it was $2 million worth of stocks. It was in an envelope called Trash. All right, so like you, and I do love that story. Like, you don't know what someone's, you know, this filing system is unless they're there. So, and if they're not alive, got to go through everything.
You know, Matt, I know you have a 1-month rule when it comes to keeping things. So tell us more about what that is.
Okay. I have a 1-month rule that makes everybody mad. And so let me tell you why. I say, if you're not going to use something in a month, get rid of it. Now, I'm a minimalist. So I went pretty extreme on that. You could say 6 months if you want. I said 1 month because no one is going to agree with 1 month. And what it does is it forces them to then pick what that time limit is. If I had said a year, nobody would have even stopped. This was, oh, year. Yep, totally agree. Next topic. All right. At 1 month, and my editor actually said, this is too extreme. Don't buy. I was like, nope, it's on purpose. I want it that way. Whatever time limit works for you, set it. I think it should be 3 months, to be really blunt. If you don't use it in 3 months, are you really going to use it? I understand with clothes, there's some difference there. A lot of people go to a year, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, like, I'll say this. On clothing is probably the hardest thing to have this rule on. And I love that old hanger, you know, the reverse hanger trick. I don't know if you've ever heard that one where you put all, you turn all the hangers one way. Yeah, you turn all the hangers one way on New Year's Eve. I'm a wild man, right? So we're doing New Year's Eve. Turn all your hangers one way, okay? And so when you wear that shirt, you turn that piece of clothing, you turn it the opposite way. So when you come back to the closet the next year, you know right away what clothes you did or did not wear, because the hangers are turning the other opposite way.
That's one of the best ideas I have ever heard.
Yeah. That's great.
I saw it. It's not mine. I saw it on the internet one time and I was like, that is brilliant. Right. And I've been doing it ever since. And I love it. It's a great idea. And it totally works because it forces you to be like, oh yeah, that Paisley shirt, I didn't even wear it for Halloween. Like, yeah, I couldn't even put it on if I wanted to. Right. And so like, I'm now, and people are like, well, what if you lose weight? Well, I'm now in that situation. Right. And I actually had some clothes, you know, that I had kept because like, well, what if I lose weight? And I went to put them on and they do fit now, but they're basically like stonewashed jeans, you know, that like, you know, I'm so far out of fashion on these things. I look ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. Style-wise. Yeah. You know, it's a different
style-wise, time. They didn't make it. It's a different time. And, you know, with women's clothes, that's different because it does come back in style 15 years later. And so I'm not saying that rule works for everybody, but the point of that rule is for you to pick a ton, like be realistic. Like, are you really going to like, do you really still use it? And I think a year at the most should be that number, because if you haven't worn it in a year, you're not going to wear it again. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
And if you do need it, you'll go get a new one. Cause we're Americans. We buy stuff. To think that we're never going to buy again is absolutely ridiculous. Right. So donate it or sell it, it's that Poshmark, that app. You could sell the majority of your clothes if they're decent on that app and do quite well.
Right.
You know, do quite well, honestly. And just give them, you don't need it. And I mean, I'm really extreme. I mean, we're now a minimalist. I have five shirts. I have three pair of jeans, five shirts. My closet is 3 feet wide. It's wonderful.
But yeah, I was going to say, how much better is that to have that? I mean, I've noticed, I moved from San Francisco to Scottsdale last year, and because I had an issue with the movers, all of my stuff is still in San Francisco. And I've found that like now, you know, I have to figure out if I'm going to get it out or not. And I'm thinking, God, this stuff was so important to me a year ago. This was what I was going to take with me. Mm-hmm. And now I don't really feel like I need any of it.
And like you don't necessarily even remember what it was.
Right. And it would probably smell too.
Right. But yeah.
Best thing that could happen is that if they lose it and they pay you for it, that'd be wonderful, right? Because you don't really need it. I mean, I moved. So the other part of this book is I actually fell in love with my now fiance, and I moved to Atlanta right in the middle of writing this book. So I was writing all my rules, and then I had to follow them because I had to clean out my house that I lived in for 10 years. And all my dad's stuff, all my mom's stuff, all my grandparents' stuff, ex-girlfriend's stuff, ex-wife's stuff, all of that stuff was in the attic. I had a 1,200 square foot attic that I had to clean out. And it was harder to follow my rules than I thought. Like, it's easy to tell them to you guys, but it's a whole nother thing to follow them, you know? And my fiance is a minimalist. And we were moving into I was moving from a 4,000 square foot home to a 2,000 square foot home. And we have seven children. Right. So we were going from three kids to seven. We're blending three and four. So I was cutting the space in half and adding four more kids. So I had to get rid of 80% of my stuff. I almost didn't move. Like, I remember calling her one day. I was like, I don't think I can do this. Like, I just can't get rid of all the stuff. And it's that whole FOMO, you know, the fear of missing out. There's just so much FOMO going on. And I'm like, what if I need this? What if I need this? Like, I can't bring my skis. Right. Like, and she's like, you're moving to Atlanta. I'm like, yeah, I know. And she's like, when's the last time you went skiing? And I was like, I mean, before Judd was born. Judd's 10, by the way. You know? And it was like, you know, she's a minimalist. She's a minimalist blogger. And so she's really pushed me on. She's kind of my mentor in simplicity. And she, one of my new rules is the whole fantasy life, right? Like, be realistic about your life. Is it fantasy life or is it real life? And all the stuff I was struggling with was fantasy life stuff, you know, like my workout gear and my snowshoes and my skis and things I had not used in 15 years, but it made me feel special, important, and that kind of stuff. And finally, she was just like, hey, look, dude, I live in Atlanta. This is how much space we have. If you want to be with me, that's what we got to do. If not, you can be really happy with your stuff up there in Virginia. And it was a really like come to Jesus moment. And I leaped, like I totally leaped off the cliff and I got rid of all this stuff. And now that like the book's coming out, like I finished the book in Atlanta after I moved. And I remember writing and I was like, my publisher was like, what did you almost not move about? I go, I can't remember, man. Like I
feel the same way. Yeah.
I called her and cried and almost, I remember I felt like I was going to throw up. I was like, I'm not going to be able to marry this woman because I can't let go of all this stuff. And this is the guy that wrote this book, you know? And a year later, could not tell you. I have no idea what it was. And I'm really happy.
Wow. Well, that's good. That's good to hear.
And I got a bunch of other junk in this house. And now I think I got too much stuff.
Matt, we always ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? And I know we've asked you this before, but what comes to mind when you think, what is it that nobody told you about keeping things or getting rid of things or hoarding? What are some of the lessons you've learned along the way that you maybe had to learn the hard way, but you'd like to pass on to somebody else so that they don't have to learn them the hard way?
I tried to talk about it in my TED talk and it didn't come across right, but I got to tell you, no one told me that buying stuff really doesn't make you happy long term. And I know that's so cheesy, but like I got into this rut as a single dad where like, you know, we were really poor growing up and my mom worked really hard for us and gave us a great life. And so when I started making money, it was like, I'm going to give my kids everything. So I went out and bought them all this stuff, bought them all these toys, filled a 4,000 square foot house full of stuff. And then to make them happy, right? And then I had to work more to keep that up and to pay for that house and to pay for the yard and landscaping and to pay for all the stuff. And then I had to pay for big trucks to move. Like, and so it was this vicious cycle of like working really hard and not being with my kids to buy them stuff to make them happy. And it was this vicious cycle of buying and not being around at all. And when I finally got rid of stuff and just stopped buying things and just started like, it gave me more time to hang out with my kids. And it actually gave me more money to do really cool stuff with my kids. Believe it or not. And like, I mean, my family's nine. And we were able to go to Disney last year because like we don't buy anything. And that sounds
Amazon
crazy.
Amazon makes that hard.
Amazon does make it hard. And I'm not trying to shame people in buying things. What I'm saying is like, you know, if you're looking for happiness, it's in time. It's time spent with people. It's not spending on stuff for people. And so like no one taught me, like, you know, we were all raised to like buy stuff. And don't get me wrong, you can historically track it all the way back to the Great Depression. Like as an Americans, like it's an economic fact that I was an economist, by the way, in a prior life. So, you know, right out of college, I rely on data quite a bit. But like, you know, right after the war, you know, we invented the mortgage and we invented the suburbs and we started buying, you know, we invented the malls and we started buying stuff. And then so it's ingrained back to our grandparents. Right. Like that's all we know. But I'm telling you, it's a myth, man. It's not real. And it doesn't make you happy. And I'll say this, the hardest thing about a minimalist, converting to minimalism, is like that first month at home with your kids. Like, because the stuff is really the babysitter, right? It's actually doing the parenting. Mm. And you have to like be a better parent. And like nobody told me that. Maybe that's it. Mm-hmm. Nobody
Never
told
thought
me
of it that way.
When you get rid of stuff, you got to be a better parent. Like I had no idea how crappy of a parent I was because I would just be like, oh yeah, go play video games. We're good, man. Yeah, man. Your limit? Yeah, it's 4 hours. No more than 4 hours today, guys. Right. Like, and I'm busy. I'm working. That's how I make money. Right. And so I would justify all this time away from my kids without making money to buy all these great things for us. And no one taught me that I was just being a crappy parent. And so, I mean, I really had to like step it up on my parenting, and which takes away from my time. So like I've actually had to cut back substantially on my work and to be a better parent and to spend time, not money. And man, that was a culture shock for me. And wow. By the way, it's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. I love it. I love it. And I'm not shaming anyone. What I'm saying is like, we didn't realize how much we rely on that stuff to parent for us.
Right, right. And I think that's a good wake-up call for people to at least think about. Mm-hmm. And how can people connect with you and learn more about the book, which we love?
Well, I guess nobody wants the book now. I just told them you were crappy parents, but I promise you that's not in the book. All right. You'll find a lot of really good helpful tips in this book. You can buy the book really anywhere. Starting February 8th, it's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any independent bookstore. If you can't afford it, go get it at the library. Like, I just want you to find the joy and happiness in it. If you want to follow us online, it's I Am Matt Paxton. Anything's I Am Matt Paxton. And my website for Legacy List, the TV show, is My Legacy List. And you can watch the first, second, and third season at MyLegacyList.com or anywhere on public television and at PBS.
Well, thank you so much, Matt, for joining us again. This has been just really insightful one more time. And we could talk to you for hours about this stuff. You're just great.
Well, thank you. I love doing it. Guys, whoever's listening, if you just anything I said rung a bell, just go do a 10-minute sweep. I promise you. Start with the dishes and your life will get better.
I'll do that right now. As soon as we say thank you again to Matt Paxton, host of the PBS show Legacy List with Matt Paxton and author of the great new book, Keep the Memories, Lose the Stuff, Declutter, Downsize, and Move Forward with Your Life. And again, his website is IamMattPaxton.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.